Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, July 15th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, I'm doing great. I wanted to start today's episode by mentioning an update to Friday's episode. So on Friday's episode, Chris came on and we had a water cooler discussion. We were just talking about stuff we've been watching. And I mentioned that I watched this 1986 movie called Black Moon Rising that has the same stunt in it from Furious 7, where a car jumps from one building to another. And I wrote a little article about this and was wondering if... I mean, I said in the podcast episode, like, clearly this must have been an inspiration for what they were doing for Furious 7. And I was trying to find proof of that on the internet when I was writing this article about it. And I couldn't find any instance of any person who worked on Furious 7 mentioning that movie. And I just thought it was really weird. So I reached out to one of the second unit directors, his name is Jack Gill, on Furious 7. And I just called him up and I was just like, hey, man, like, I just wanted to ask, like, was this a conversation on the set? Were you guys aware of this movie? Like, was there like an acknowledgement that you guys were riffing on this? And he's like, I've never heard of this movie before in my life. And like, it was absolutely not part of any of our discussions about it. So I just thought it was really weird. So anyway, I mentioned I was so sure on Friday's episode. I was like, well, it's so obvious that this was clearly an inspiration to the folks who worked on Furious 7. And a little reporting shows that that's not true. And these people actually had no idea and just came to the same idea independently like 30 years later, basically. So I just wanted to clarify that for anybody who happens to be listening to multiple episodes of the show. Okay, with all of that said, Ryan, let's get into today's episode. Let's talk about some box office stuff. You want to kick things off with a recap of the top 10 at the box office?
I would love to. And just so listeners are aware, I have some very, very loud construction going on right outside my office. So if you hear any beeps or any sort of sounds that sound like it could be Foley art for a cartoon or something, that's what's going on. So let's go ahead and go over what happened at the box office this weekend. So let's start with the top 10 here. Despicable Me 4 continued its run atop the charts with $44.6 million. That represents just over a 40% drop, which is a ridiculously good hold. Number two, the surprise of the week, which we're going to talk about a lot, is Long Legs from Neon, which debuted to $22.6 million. And we are going to go, seriously, we're going to talk about this a lot because there is a lot to go over here, but that is a hugely impressive number. Number three is Inside Out 2 with another $20.7 million, dropping just shy of 32% in its fifth weekend. That movie is continuing its ridiculous, ridiculous run globally. At number four, we have A Quiet Place Day One, quietly holding very well with $11.8 million in its third weekend, dropping just under 43%. Number five, we had another newcomer in Fly Me to the Moon from Sony and Apple, which debuted to $10 million. Number six, we had Bad Boys Ride or Die with $4.4 million in its sixth weekend. Again, another movie that is holding very well. Number seven, we had Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1, which is $2.4 million. Another big drop for that one, not looking good. At number eight, we had Maxine with just over $2 million in its second weekend. That dropped almost 70%, so Long Legs kind of ate its lunch. At number eight, we had Sound of Hope, the story of Possum Trot, which is the latest from Angel Studios, same studio behind Sound of Freedom. That made just $1.3 million in its second weekend, dropping almost 57%. And at number 10, we had something called Indian 2 with $1.2 million. I do not know what that is. So, yeah, that's where we stand.
Okay, so, I mean, do we talk about Long Legs first, or do we talk about everything else and then talk about Long Legs? How do you want to approach this?
I think, why don't we just go ahead and go in order, because I think the two biggest things... You know, Despicable Me 4 did something pretty impressive this weekend. Then we can talk about Long Legs, and we'll get into what else is in the top 10 here. So let's go in order. Let's talk about the Minions first, shall we?
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
So look, we talked about this last week. These movies are not initially for me or Ben, or frankly, most of the people on Slash Film staff. And I suspect a lot of you listeners, unless you have kids, but what we're talking about now is an animated movie that has made $437.8 million after a little less than 2 weeks in theaters. More importantly, the Despicable Me / Minions franchise has now crossed the $5 billion mark worldwide. It is the only animated franchise in history to do that. And quite frankly, it's not that close. The next closest is Shrek at $4 billion. So it is remarkable.
Wow. Yeah, so like, I guess my question is, there's just absolutely no end in sight for this franchise, because I think Despicable Me and Minions are just going to be a part of the cultural firmament for many years to come, given how successful this franchise continues to be. So I don't know, for anybody who's just like dreaming of the day when they no longer have to pay attention to this stuff, that day is just getting further and further away the more money these movies continue to make, right? Like, they've already announced a sequel and then another Minions movie. So like, we're looking at probably, I don't know, 2030 or something at like the potential endpoint for this. If the next two decide to tank all of a sudden, which like there's no signs of that actually happening, right?
None. There's zero signs of that happening, because now the floor for Despicable Me 4 is probably around $800 million worldwide for a $100 million movie. So that's, I mean, an absolute worst case scenario. If it just collapses somehow, the movie would still limp its way to $700 million worldwide. So no, these movies aren't going anywhere. But for, you know, okay, fine. Maybe you don't care about Despicable Me. Well, what this did is this gave Illumination a foothold in the animation industry. And you can say what you want. Maybe these Illumination movies aren't for you, but they have invested in original animated movies as well. We've had Sing, which born a franchise. You had The Secret Life of Pets. More recently, you had Migration, which sort of kind of low-key became a hit, legging out to $300 million worldwide. So look, you're getting original movies out of this too, and they're keeping budgets reasonable. Like, it's kind of become a really important thing to modern animation. So I see this as a good thing, because this franchise can prop up Illumination and allow them to kind of take some risks with their originals going forward. So, you know, I mean, it might not be that you like these movies, but, you know, there is good that comes from it for sure.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a worthwhile trade-off for me having to roll my eyes at a trailer every once in a while, like every couple years, for the good that this is doing for the industry as a whole. And like you said, propping up other stuff and giving other filmmakers the opportunities to sneak in those other original movies and stuff. Like, maybe one of those will become something that interests me or interests some of our listeners, maybe more than the Despicable Me / Minions stuff does. So,
yeah. And it's, again, like, no one's forcing you to see these movies, but a lot of people clearly are enjoying them. So, you know, who am I to, you know,
right. Yeah. Okay. So what's next?
All right, so yeah, so look, we got to talk about Long Legs. This is, I mean, I was a little bullish on the movie. Like, I thought it was going to do reasonably well. And
I went back and listened to our episode from, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about like the upcoming horror stuff that was yet to debut in 2024. And you mentioned this, and you're like, Long Legs is coming, which I think is going to do better than people think it's going to do. And then we moved on from there. It was just like a real quick thing, but your prediction certainly panned out.
Well, I don't want to take any credit, just because I think, like, even... this is where my prognosticating is always way off, right? Where I was like, let's be very clear. $10 million for this movie would have been great. We would have still been like, wow, Long Legs did great. And it made $22.6 million. And I need to try to paint a picture for why this is so good. Yes, we've seen horror movies make a lot of money before. not from a completely independent studio. This was Neon. This is just domestic. We're not talking about worldwide numbers. Neon's biggest movie ever opening was Immaculate earlier this year, which I believe made about $5 million. And that was Neon's biggest opening weekend ever. Long Legs is already the studio's third highest grossing movie in North America ever, behind just I, Tonya, and the Best Picture winner Parasite. Even if Long Legs legs out terribly, it will probably pass Parasite by the end of its run. Now, that's just domestic, mind you, but still. So, you know, that is just for starters. Despicable Me 4 was in over 4,400 screens this weekend. Long Legs was just on 2,500. So, the per screen average for Despicable Me 4 was just over $10,000. The per screen average for Long Legs, just over $9,000. So, you're talking about those per screens, those theaters were packed this weekend all around the country for an R-rated movie with no franchise hook, no guaranteed butts in seats stars, and they never showed Nicolas Cage. Like, that is one of the big hooks of the marketing, is that you know he's in it, but you haven't seen him. So I think, like, all around, this is incredible. It is literally one of the biggest openings for an independent movie of the last 15 years, I think. I mean, of any kind. Forget horror. It's crazy. So, wow. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, there was optimism. You know, there were people predicting. I think the biggest prediction that I had seen ahead of the weekend was in the $15 million neighborhood, which to me seemed bullish. So the fact that it went so much higher than even what I considered to be a very bullish estimate was, I mean, it's crazy. It's truly crazy. You know, the movie cost like $10 million to make. Neon bought the North American rights. It's still got to open, you know, elsewhere around the world. I mean, good for Oz Perkins, good for Micah Monroe, good for Neon. Like, I've got nothing but positive stuff to say here. This is just genuinely crazy.
Yeah, I was thinking back. I was trying to come up with, like, a comp, a similar example. And something that jumped to mind was Talk to Me, the movie that came out last year from A24, which is, again, sort of a smaller studio, not necessarily with the same resources as a major or whatever, right? And again, that's a movie that didn't necessarily have like huge names in it. It was very like premise forward. And that movie made like $10.5 million in its opening weekend. So this more than doubled that. And yeah, it's really impressive to think about, because Talk to Me has already gotten a green light for a sequel. So, I mean, I don't know what the sequel prospects of Long Legs are, nor am I particularly interested in seeing a sequel to Long Legs, because I think the movie is just like very good on its own. It works as a solo piece and probably don't need to franchise it. But yeah, I don't know. Did anything come to mind in terms of comparisons for you, Ryan?
For as long as I've been tracking box office professionally, I can't think of a horror movie quite like this that has done what this movie did. I mean, I truly can't. And again, I'm not saying that there isn't one, but it was hard for me to find a direct comp. And I think Talk to Me is not a bad one. But yeah, but I mean, that's A24. A24 has more resources than Neon, you know, flat out. I mean, like, just as an example, me and my fiance really want to see Long Legs because we both love horror. We had a free weekend because my car was in the shop and we live close to an Alamo Draft House. Every single showing was virtually sold out or with only one or two terrible seats, nothing together. Like, we straight up couldn't see this movie because the demand was there. Like, wow. That's, you know, that's crazy. And it was the Alamo Draft House South Lamar, which is one of the more in-demand locations, and it's probably one of the prime locations for a movie like this. But still, I can't remember the last time for a horror movie like of this, you know, that I couldn't at least, you know, we could have maybe scooped a couple tickets to at some point. You know, it was pretty crazy. So, I mean, is it going to get a sequel? No. Oz Perkins, the director, has been very clear that, like, this is not, you know, and my understanding, I haven't got a chance to see it yet, but it's a pretty uncompromising movie from what I understand. Like, it's not like they were pulling any punches, you know, right. which is impressive. It's pretty cool that an uncompromised vision like this got to this level. And look, the cinema score is a little rough. The audience score is not nearly as good as the critic score. So word of mouth might be tepid, but it also might end up getting that, like, even a negative response might ping in someone's brain to be like, well, maybe I need to see this for myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, forget the fact that, like, this movie still got a VOD run. It's definitely going to get like a Blu-ray release of some kind. Like it will play on cable eventually. Like this movie's going to make a lot of money. And yeah. So I think what it mostly did is Oz Perkins' quote just went up for whatever he does next. But also important that Neon has already signed on to distribute his next two movies. And Oz's next movie is an adaptation of Stephen King's The Monkey, which I believe comes out in February of next year and is already shot. So I can't even imagine how excited Neon is that they have the from the director of Long Legs and the mind of Stephen King, they get to put on that monkey poster. Yeah. You know, which is pretty, which is, again, you're already starting a hell of a marketing campaign there. So I don't know what else I have to say right now other than that just like we've been dying for an original horror hit this year. And again, I expected Long Legs to do well. I just can't believe that this is the one we're talking about as like being the original horror breakout this year. It's pretty cool. You know, I don't know, man. It's just one of those like after a first half of 2024 where you and I were talking a lot of, you know, doom and gloom and it's really cool to have stuff like this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and dive a little bit deeper into the rest of the box office stuff.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Okay, so tell me about Fly Me to the Moon. I've not had a chance to see this yet. I've heard the movie is surprisingly good, which is shocking because I didn't particularly think the trailers were great, but I don't think I've heard a bad thing about the quality of this movie from a bunch of different folks that work at Slash Film, from a bunch of different people that happen to be on whatever Blue Sky or Threads or whatever social media platform I happen to be scrolling through. There was just like a lot of positive critical response that I happened to see in my own anecdotal little bubble about this movie, but it did not perform particularly well at the box office. So tell me about that, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've seen nothing but positivity about this movie. It had, I think, an A- cinema score, Channing Tatum, Scarlett Johansson, directed by Greg Berlanti, who is perhaps the most prolific producer in the history of television. And you know, he's directed a few movies like Love, Simon, and you know, poor Greg Berlanti now gets to go, you know, cry into his pile of money. But
I guess like Norman Lear and people, you know.
No, but he's up there. I mean, if you truly look at, I mean, he is in the conversation. The man is truly prolific, but that's beside the point. So let's talk about, $10 million for a movie. Now, a lot of people are saying $100 million budget, and that's fine as a shorthand. But this was a $100 million acquisition by Apple. So the movie was made and Apple paid $100 million to get it in a bidding war. So, you know, that's paying everybody. That's whatever. That's so it's $100 million. Now, that's still, at the end of the day, a $100 million price tag, right? Like before marketing. So, but what's important is here, Sony is distributing a movie that comes from Apple. This happened with Killers of the Flower Moon last year. This happened with Napoleon last year. This is what Apple's doing. So, Apple has a $3.6 trillion market cap. I did not know what Apple's market cap was until a couple of days ago, and I could not believe it was that much. So, when you look at what $100 million means to a company with a $3.6 trillion market cap, it is next to nothing. Especially when that $100 million is not going to be gone forever. Okay, $10 million opening weekend. I believe it did, what was it, $9 million overseas. So it's at a $19 million start. All indications are that audiences like this movie, it will lag out reasonably well. So let's say it can somehow get to $75 million worldwide at the box office. Maybe it gets, you know, $40 million of that gets returned to Apple or something along those lines. Sony takes a cut, whatever. Okay, then that works to advertise a probable VOD release. Maybe they cut a deal to release it on some sort of physical media. And then it ultimately is used to prop up Apple TV Plus, attract subscribers there. Apple will make a percentage of that money back. So as long as they're not losing a fortune, and they're not going to lose $100 million, they're going to lose something on it. But over the life of the movie, it'll get close to maybe doing something like breaking even, depending on how their algorithm figures this stuff out. Mm-hmm. And whatever it loses, it's going to be a drop in the bucket for a company that big. So I don't know how long they're going to continue to invest in movies like this, but them paying $100 million for this was more of a flex than it was them overspending. You know, I think the movie itself was produced for a reasonable amount of money. It's just that Apple decided to outbid everybody else to get it. So, yeah. I don't know. We'll see how long that continues. But for the moment, this is a company that can shoulder whatever losses come. You know, $10 million for a rom-com starring Channing Tatum and Scarlett Johansson isn't that bad. You know, if you take the budget out of it, if you take all that out of it, and the indicators suggest it will probably leg out pretty well. So, you know, I don't know. I'm of mixed mind about this, but because it's so hard to determine what a hit looks like for Apple or Amazon or some of these other companies that are essentially gargantuan tech companies with a small side of content. You know, I really don't know how to judge these things, but it's good that these movies exist. Sony gets to distribute a movie. Theaters get a movie out of it. Like, the positive is good. It's the same way that it was positive for Napoleon, Argyle, these other movies we talked about. It's just hard to know what the economic picture is on a bigger scope, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. My question for you was going to be, is Apple just going to be done making these movies like pretty soon? Because Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Argyle, and now this have all performed not super well compared to, you know, their expectations, compared to projections, compared to a lot of the other movies that came out in theaters around those times. And like, yes, it is a drop in the bucket in terms of their overall market cap, but like, somebody is paying attention over there at Apple. And I love the fact that these movies exist right now. I love that we're in this period where they're taking chances and spending that money to invest in making movies, because I love movies. And I love the fact that maybe this movie wouldn't have existed in this form if Apple didn't step up and buy it. Or you could say that about Killers of the Flower Moon, certainly, right? Because Paramount basically dropped the movie because they didn't want to pony up for it, and Apple actually did. So, you know, I'd love that we're in this place right now, but it feels so tenuous to me, Ryan, because I imagine somebody at Apple, you know, looking at a spreadsheet of their releases and seeing these numbers and realizing that these movies are not making a ton of money on, you know, in their opening release. And like you said, it's so hard to judge this stuff because we don't know what they value. So do they value just the idea of being in Hollywood and being able to rub shoulders with famous people and like say, hey, we're champions of creativity and art, and like, we're an outlet that people can trust, that we're going to be here to basically like be the old school, like Medici, you know, ancient Italy level, like Renaissance level people who are just going to back, you know, these artists? Or are they eventually just going to realize like, oh, this isn't actually working. We're losing a pretty sizable amount of money here. So maybe we should just pack it up and go home. And I know you don't have an answer to that, but all those thoughts are swirling around in my head every time I see an Apple movie that doesn't do well.
Well, I think, again, to the point of like, something like this might, over the life of the movie, not lose a fortune. Like, I think Killers of the Flower Moon, the math there was, we get one of the last movies likely from an absolute legend, and we get a boatload of Oscar nominations and prestige and all of these things. And I think that was a similar thinking for Napoleon. And Napoleon has that 4-hour cut coming out on Apple TV Plus, so that's added value. I think the difference with Apple is that they can clearly afford to run more expensive experiments. And I think maybe they don't stick to making $200 million would-be franchise movies like, you know, Argyle or something in the future. But I think them paying a little bit of a premium to get a project and give it a home and flex a little and be in this space, as they are a tech company and this is an emerging space in tech in some ways, I think it's worth it for them to stay in that game. They might evolve how they do it, and they might rationalize spending a little, but I don't see them quitting it anytime soon. But, you know, so I hope it sticks because it is good for everybody, but, you know, it does seem charitable on Apple's part in some way. So I don't know. We'll see how long that sticks, but they can certainly shoulder the losses in the same way that, like, Sony buying the Alamo Drafthouse, they can shoulder some, you know, mild losses if they want to lower ticket prices or anything like that. You know, it's having a big backer for a thing is helpful in this way.
Yeah. Okay. So what other stories do you think are worth discussing here from this top 10?
Well, as we're talking, Inside Out 2 is going to pass the Super Mario Brothers movie at the global box office. It is, as of the weekend, made $1.35 billion worldwide. It will pass the $1.36 billion total of the Mario Brothers movie at some point today, and become even go even higher up the lifetime grosses chart, which is just, I mean, utterly insane at this point. So, you know, what we're looking at is once it passes Mario today, it will be number 16 all time. Just behind Avengers Age of Ultron at $1.4 billion. Next up after that is Barbie, which did $1.44 billion. Inside Out 2 will probably pass that within the week or next weekend. Then you're gunning for Frozen 2 and Top Gun Maverick. You know, so it's all but assured to crack the top 10 all time at $1.52 billion, which would put it past the Avengers. And that's more of a matter of when, not if, at this point. So that is pretty impressive. Not a lot else to say about that we haven't already said, but it continues to rocket up the charts and hold very well.
Yes. So.
And then A Quiet Place Day One cracked $200 million worldwide. It's at 220. It should kind of fall in a similar range as A Quiet Place Part Two by the end of it. You know, which would put it at around 300 worldwide, give or take, which would be great. Ensures that franchise is going to continue. Bad Boys Ride or Die is at 378, might narrowly miss out on 400 worldwide. We'll see. Ben, I can't remember. Have you and I talked since the Horizon and American Saga news came out?
No, we haven't. And I was going to save this for tomorrow's episode, because I think we're planning on doing a news episode tomorrow.
Okay.
But we can talk about it a little here. And so, cause I mentioned it actually on Friday's episode of the show, I think.
Okay. That, cause I think it's super relevant
with.
So Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1, 2.4 million this weekend. Like I mentioned in its third weekend, it has made 27 million total domestic, and the international numbers are starting to creep in. So it's at $30 million for $100 million movie. Now, what happened last week, I won't get into it too much because I'm sure you'll have more to say tomorrow, but Warner Brothers and Kevin Costner's company have pulled Horizon Chapter 2 from its planned August 16th release date. Now, we had talked a bunch on this podcast earlier in the year. Wow, this is a weird experiment that Horizon Chapter 2 is coming out less than 2 months after the first one. And the explanation is that they're trying to allow people to watch it on VOD and Max before they drop Chapter 2 in theaters. No release date yet, no knowing when that's going to happen. So it's clear that the box office results resulted in them changing their strategy. There's no question about it. So to what degree? I don't know. Does that mean they go try to make some other deal for the streamer? Do they just wait until much later in the year to drop Chapter 2 and hope for the best? I have no idea, but it's not good. I mean, I know Kevin Costner seemed to be okay with the idea that these movies weren't necessarily going to make money in their theatrical run, but there's a big difference between not making money and being this far from profitability. Especially when you have a four film saga planned. And yes, you might have some angel investors who have given you a bunch of money and said, hey, we just like what you do. You know, we're comfortable with this on some level. I don't know how comfortable they are with it. And so who knows? I don't know what this means, but it is certainly worth noting that this movie's done poorly enough for all involved to change their strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned that they explicitly said in their press release that they wanted people to see this on PVOD and Max. So the PVOD run begins tomorrow. This movie comes to digital tomorrow for probably what, like $20 for a rental or something. That's like pretty standard right now these days. So you have to assume they're going to let that stand as the only way to watch it outside of theaters for a while before they put it on Max. So I think you're right that it's going to be a long time before Horizon Chapter 2 comes out in theaters, if it does at all, because they're talking about PVOD and Max. So I don't know exactly what the timeline is going to be. They certainly have not indicated exactly what that's going to be. But man, what a change of plans. Like, talk about last minute. Like, I think you mentioned in the article, like, people had already purchased tickets to see Horizon Chapter 2. So all that stuff has to be refunded. And there was like a whole thing of like being able to, I think it was called like a Horizon Pass or something, where you could buy tickets to both movies at the same time. And like, all that stuff has to be refunded. So this is not something that that happens every day. So certainly a big deal.
No, and I would go so far as to predict right now that maybe Costner reworks the scripts and he tries to wrap this up in three. That would be my first thing, is that maybe it doesn't go four movies. Maybe it goes three, because he's already too deep in, I think, to pull totally. The other thing is, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to cut a deal with a streamer and maybe not be made whole, but closer to whole. And that maybe he negotiates where we still get a VOD window and we still get to put it out on DVD or whatever. So, and I get that revenue. But maybe he tries to go to Netflix and say, you know, okay, what will you do? Because I think that's probably the closest way where you can make up the gap. I don't know. That's my guess. That's my slightly bold prediction, that in the coming weeks, we might get some sort of streaming deal announced instead for the other two. We'll see.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Any other, I guess, closing thoughts on box office stuff that you wanted to mention here?
The only thing, and this is more of a selfish point here, is that Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is at $395.5 million worldwide. It is about to arrive on 4K. It might narrowly miss out on that $400 million mark, but, I'd personally like to see it get over the hump. I don't know if it'll happen, but I think worth sort of highlighting that movie's success just as it's kind of ending its run. And, you know, I think now kind of starts the countdown of, do they announce a sequel? When do they announce it? That's kind of what I'm looking at. So
yeah,
that's kind of closing thoughts for me.
Okay, excellent. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about all of these stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.